has awakened in me more than anger or hate. I don't think I feel any of it. What it has awakened in me is like a realignment of what truly matters in life. And what truly matters in life, ever since I've been a kid, is creating. As long as I can create, whether it's freaking painting using seashell pasta or whatever, or it is painting, or it is doing concept art for movies, I think I'll be happy. Yeah. Feel like I was a completely different human being at this time. So much happened. Oh my god.
Yeah, we're just talking about like how much has happened in the last 4 years, like 3 years comparatively to last 3 decades.
Oh, there's that too. Yeah. So overall, between the 10 years and those few years, it's been 20 years. It feels like 20 years.
Yeah. So like 5 years until 2020 and then another 20. So exactly. 25.
Exactly. That's how it's calculated nowadays. Yeah.
We age like motherfuckers.
Once again, look at our hair. Look at our face. Yeah.
I
hope when we're 90, we'll do another one of those.
That's going to be in 2 years.
Exactly.
Yeah. How's life been for you, man?
It's been good.
We talk to each other like time to time, like texting and messages, but like not really, you know, like in the long extent, like usually just memes, like how are you doing, like how's family, all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I would say it's been good. You know, one thing that can describe how I've been feeling, you know, about this whole life, to be honest, is I see my girls, you know, and I have two girls. One is 7, the other one is 9, and they're both extremely different. The young one is like my wife. The older one is like me. And when I see the older one, you know, spending her days painting, I'm like, oh, no, what have I done? You know, maybe that explains a little bit my whole life. If I feel that way, you know, that tells you a little bit. I feel the artist's life is a massive cross to bear, you know, and I'm complaining. I'm sure there's many other jobs that are much harder, but it's especially with everything and all the changes that are happening in our world on so many levels. I feel it's being able to do the art you want and you love and keep creating is a constant adaptation, basically. You know, and
you're like at some point Matthew McConaughey in fucking Interstellar.
That's exactly right. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Yeah. It's constant adaptation, you know. But there's advantages to that too, you know. It forces you to be very creative, that's for sure.
Yeah, you can't help it. You can't help it. Like creativity, once you have it in your DNA, you cannot get rid of it. You just need to create.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And like I say, that's the cross to bear. Yeah.
I've read a I'm not sure if the statistic is real or not. And I can't I need to find out where it was and if it's real, actually. It's like I bring those things up and I never check them. Might be some fucking trolls.
Well, thankfully, like... it's not a New York Times interview right now. So thank you.
Yeah. But this article is saying that only 5% of people have an urge to create stuff. And then the 95% of people just want to consume. So that was like an interesting insight. I need to, again, if it's true, that's kind of crazy, right? Because that kind of puts a lot of things in perspective.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really good timing that you contacted me, is because I've had kind of that awakening about myself. I'm 50 now. I turned 50 in September, you know. And I had that awakening just a few months ago.
You don't look 50, dude. You don't look 50. You look much younger. You're a young buck. It's only your gray beard is like...
Yeah, it's selling it, yeah. But it's only been like a few months that I've understood, because I took a long break, you know, over the new company I work at, you know, I'm more in a management position right now. And I didn't want to look at my Wacom for a year. And I was like, this is so sad. You know, why have I come to that? You know, why has it come to the point where I don't want to draw, I don't want to paint? And I was extremely sad about it, you know? And I was like, okay, this is the life I have now. This is what's going on. And then after a year, you know, and Christmas, and I got hit suddenly with like, and that urge you're talking about, that urge to create, it just like hit me like a train out of nowhere. And I was like, well, hello, how you doing? You know, it's like suddenly I found my old self again after a year of not doing anything. So it's very good timing you contacted me now. Yeah.
Hello, darkness, my old friend, man.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, you've been an absolute veteran of the industry. Like, I remember seeing your work, like, prior, like, well, I discovered your work on Cijin forums.
Yeah.
That was 2003.
Yeah.
Just to put things in perspective, that's like 21 years ago, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. I know you worked in the industry like many, many years prior.
Yeah, I started young. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Remind me, what was your first, like, because you did a lot of video game stuff.
My
you
first
know?
Project?
Yeah.
Well, you're talking my first shipped project or my first project?
Yeah. Yeah. Like something that came out and was like, this is my portfolio piece, you know?
Something that I saw the light of day.
That's a good way to say it.
That I'm proud of talking about. That's a whole different story.
It just narrows down. Like, we went from here to here.
So the first project that was kind of known was Turok Evolution. And I was at Acclaim at the time. That was my first job in the US. And that's something that I understood clearly when I was working in Europe. I understood at some point, relatively quickly, that if I wanted to do something that shipped, I had to go to America. Especially at the time, you know, the video game industry is not at all what it is today. That was 30 years ago. The industry was full of charlatans. You know, people taking bags of money of the company and going to Brazil, you know, it's stuff like that, stories like that. I have quite a few. I'm not going to go into that, but that was the time, you know. So I understood I had to go to America in order to do something, you know. So Turok was the first one we released. And then I helped
that,
as well.
Is that when you moved to America too?
Yeah. I moved to Texas at the time in Austin, you know. Loved it. Still to this day, I love Austin. I don't live there anymore, but I love Austin. Yeah.
And then, Have you been to Austin lately?
I haven't been in a while, but I saw Austin before it was anything, and then after, and I saw the whole transition, and it's really like, it's shocking to see how cities develop, how like lives change, how like urbanism changes. Like as soon as money comes in the game, like cities just transform like right away. There was a time where in Austin downtown, you only had like three-legged dogs and cockroaches. That was it. Truth. Yeah. I was there.
Yeah.
I was coming
that
from
sounds
London
like a lot of
time.
Fun.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Wow. So it's like almost been, like almost 30 years for you.
Yeah.
It's
more
crazy.
More than 30 years in the business. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still alive.
I wonder how was that move? Because like people don't realize that moving across the pond or like just moving cities is difficult, right? But moving countries is difficult, and then moving to a different continent, that's like a whole other game, right?
That's correct. It was I was ready for it, to be honest. You know, I was extremely ambitious when I was young. I was so hungry for work, success, and working on big game projects, and I was ready. And every time I made big moves, you know, I think I was really ready at the time. When I did that move from Europe, so at the time, I had worked on at various companies and projects, very small projects. And then I was offered a job then at Acclaim, you know. And at the time, when I knew that I was hired at Acclaim and the visa process was going to take time, I spent all my cash I went snowboarding for 5 months, like a bum, you know, with like in my car, sleeping in my car and stuff like that. And then, so I arrived in the US. I was ready for it. I had nothing. I had no money. I had nothing. I just arrived and I was like, I'm ready for a new part of my life. I knew it was like something big was opening for me, you know. So it was easy, I would say. And I had help from people that welcomed me in Austin. You know, at the time, there was a painter named Roger Barcelon. He passed away just a few years back. And he took me in really like a dad almost, you know, him and his wife. They took me in. Like parents, you know, so I had a lot of friends that helped me.
It's funny you say that, you know, how gaming industry used to be back then. Like even when I started, like, technically 2004 is like when I started actually working in the industry, and it was just like you know what it was? It's like fake jewelry. It's like, it looks bling bling, very shiny.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Then you get to the company's like, oh, our payment's going to be late. I was like, what? What is happening?
That describes the old game industry perfectly. This is it.
Yeah.
This was it. Yeah.
It changed dramatically now.
Stolen 401ks. I've seen it all. I've seen it all. Yeah.
Yeah. It changed dramatically. It's now just so worldwide. I don't think there's a continent that has it better. I don't think.
No, and I was shocked. I was shocked when I because I just did the move back a year ago to video games, and how humane it has become is really shocking. You know, in the 2000s, well, truthfully, there was a time where it was basically slavery. I mean, I remember doing 7 days a week work job sometimes, you know, and just madness, you know. So things have changed a lot. There's so much respect nowadays for artists, for the artistry, of course there's always horror stories, you know, but overall there's like a respect, you know.
Yeah, where do you think it's going? Because this year started with like mass layoffs pretty much everywhere in the gaming company.
Talking about horror stories, that's horror stories. Greed is greed, you know. So, you know, you have companies that during the years of COVID, you know, made billions over billions over billions, you know, and then now that we're not in COVID, you know, they're firing people in order to reestablish cash in the bank, you know, and that's anything but humane, you know. So it has taken a different format. I think now you have much bigger corporations, and when they sneeze, everybody feels it, you know, all over the world.
That's true. That's true. I think there was quite a bit of overhiring going on too. And I wonder if you had the same experience, but I've been working in a couple of game studios, and in all of them, I started in this kind of garage form. So it was Crytek. Well, two big ones. It was Crytek and Naughty Dog. Those are like two big ones I've spent most of my career in, like almost 10 years combined. And when I started at Crytek, it was like 50 people. Like the whole team was 50 people in this small Bavarian town, Coburg. It was like two houses appropriated to be basically a studio. And it was, and then they grew to like 400 people in like a few years.
Yeah.
Right. And then the same thing happened with Naughty Dog. When I joined Naughty Dog, it was like 100 with a change. And when I left it, it was like triple the size and like two projects, concurrently. I wonder if it's just the companies growing for sake of growing and overhiring, thinking that hiring is the way to go to fill in the gap.
But there's different perspective. You know, there are definitely financial consideration when you do that. You know, the thing. Let's say the CEO of a company decides his plan is to say, well, I'm going to serve that company for 5 years, you know, and then I'm going to sell. You know, a lot of CEOs plan things that way, you know. So then after 10 years or 5, 10 years, you know, the more people you hire, when you, the value of the company is much higher, you know. And so that, I mean, you have a parachute that's much bigger. So in general, that's how it goes. You know, you have like a financial decision that is made, you know, and future development decision that is made so that when the person who owns the company leaves, you know, they sell it for the highest price possible, you know.
Yeah, especially if they go public or sell to like a distributor or a publisher.
Yeah.
We all remember Blizzard before it was acquired. By Activision.
It's
wild, and it's you know, it's wild. The wild thing that I notice is that, I mean, you only notice it when you get older, but it's like the span of 5 or 6 years. Like when you're young, it's like, oh my god, 5 years, such a, like, it's so much time, right? And then 5 years pass by like a blink of an eye, and you're like, whoa, what the fuck happened, you know? But it feels like
the older you get, the faster it goes too.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. The time is flying. But I think I'm like noticing this kind of pattern of. I'm gonna talk about this. We can kind of evolve this to film industry, because that pattern happens in film industry a lot, and I think it happened during our time, for the most part, our time in film. Let's call it this way.
Yeah.
Is that the studios start with passion for great product, right? And then the managers take over. Not really artists, you know?
Yeah, well, the thing is that we, you know, we have felt kind of a microcosm of what the movie industry has been. The movie industry has been around for 100 years now, something like this, you know? So it's, when it started, it was mostly a lot of very passionate people, you know, that maybe started making coffee and then went on to become producers and or directors or set designers or whatever, you know. And as time has gone by and globalization has happened, now it's become more of a, I mean, it's MBA and lawyers, people that own these kind of big companies, and the bottom line is the bottom line is the main thing is just making cash, you know. And we arrived at the point, you know, you and I in that movie industry where it was already like this, you know, and was already shifting, you know, where budgets were getting lower, where work was becoming more difficult, you know, and you had to fight for every time you jump from project to another, we talked about it, you have to fight for your paycheck to be reflective of your abilities. You know, you always have to prove yourself, you know, and it's getting worse and worse. There's no doubt about that. Yeah,
I've definitely noticed like the pressure has been there in last, like especially last 2 or 3 years, like since COVID, definitely a massive amount of pressure to lower cost. You joined the film industry a little sooner than I did. What was the first film you worked on?
The first film I worked on was Tron Legacy.
Tron Legacy. Yeah, I remember.
I had done a comic book for I Am Legend, actually. I'd done two comic books for I Am Legend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When was that? That was like obviously before.
Just before
they adapted it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember when I saw it, when you released the Tron stuff, I was like, what the fuck, dude? That was crazy. It was just crazy to look at. It was amazing. Some of my favorite work from you, for sure.
Thank you. I was young.
Yeah. That was Joe Kosinski, right?
Yes. I love him.
Joe Kosinski's project.
Great director. Yeah.
And then you worked on the sequel, right? I think we were all...
I worked on a bunch of sequels, but I didn't work on the one that's being made right now.
No, but the one that was canceled.
I worked on three versions after the first one.
So we by proxy worked together on that one.
Yeah, so three of them got canceled.
It was with Darren.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Darren's amazing too. That was such a good time. Yeah, I think you were already you already left California by that time, I think.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I joined film. I left Naughty Dog to work on Ghost in the Shell. That was my kind of foray.
I remember now.
But the ghost, it's funny because the Ghost in the Shell started and then like literally a month in got paused. Like, what the fuck they do?
Yeah, that's the movie industry. Yeah, that's a pretty brutal lesson to learn from coming from games. Yes.
Yeah. But literally the same time, other production designer I used to work with, like by proxy, Owen Patterson, reached out. Was like, hey, we're doing Captain America. It's like, yeah, yes, please. You know.
Yeah. And that once was you're like in and you've done a good job, yeah, it's a chain reaction after. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you make connections. For me, it was, I think like three or four projects in, it stopped being about like, oh, this is a great project idea or a great film or a great script. It was like, who is the production designer? Like,
yeah,
is it someone I know? And it's, yeah,
which team is that? Yeah,
yeah, is it a fun team to work with?
Exactly. Yeah. There's no doubt that, I mean, looking back, I mean, all the projects I worked on, like compared to like the importance that my family has in my life, you know, is like a drop, you know. So what matters is truly the people I was with, you know, the memories I have with. I still communicate almost on a daily basis with all the people I worked with in the movie industry because I love those guys to death, you know, and we went through battles together and it's such amazing memories. I miss it. There was an addiction to the movie industry where it was almost like, I've never taken it, but crack cocaine, where you're like, everything is intense. Everything is in a hurry. Everything has to happen now. You know, and because of that, your level is like goes tenfold just over a month period, you know, and there's something extremely addicting to that. And there's also something extremely destructive about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very kind of fast-paced. We gotta move fast. We don't have a lot of budget. This has to be done. That has to be done.
Yeah. And it's not true. I mean, they have a huge amount of budget, but not for you.
Yeah, but not for you. Not for you. And in credits, you're behind the guy who drove the fucking food.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hierarchy, you know, important.
Yeah.
Food is more important than I've always said, you know. And that's the thing that's like,
more important art.
Yeah, than concept art. It is, you know. And the thing that I've always said, you know, when I give classes or whatever, I ask people, what do you think concept art is important for? And everybody's like, inspiration and to give ideas to the director. I'm like, wrong. The only reason why they are concept artists is to save money. That's the only reason.
Yeah.
If tomorrow we are replaced by other things that do concept art that don't cost money, we will be replaced. And I'm very sad that I was so right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I did not look at that role from this perspective because I used to think like, yes, like we are bringing the inspiration and all this kind of stuff. And I think it rings true to very occasional cases of people who are exceptional at coming up with amazing ideas and executing them.
I agree.
Right. But for the most part, I truly believe that, I mean, you know this better than I do, but remember how small the industry was when you started? Like,
sure. Yeah.
Knowing another artist was like almost unheard of, right? Like you would know only like a bunch of people.
Yeah, and imagine before us, you know, when there was Moebius, you know, Ron Cobb, and there was like five guys, you know, at the time, you know, and then we have one project and then we just worked on a handful of projects, you know?
Yeah. If you're an artist and you knew the, like at least knew the craft a bit, like in the 80s, you would be working on the James Cameron movies, basically.
You could, yeah.
Like
you could.
Off the street. Like,
yeah, I think the difficulty would have been to be known at the time, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I spoke with, you know, Paul Osimo, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
you worked with him before.
Yeah.
He was like hired to make props, like off the street, like for I think it was the Sphere or the Abyss or something.
That's
like
awesome.
On the James Cameron movie. Like my first movie was James Cameron movie. Like what the fuck, bro?
That's amazing. Yeah.
Like right place, now, it's right just time. Unheard of, right? Yeah. I mean, timing is everything, as always, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the industry like changed so dramatically. Like with the ArtStation, when ArtStation started to come up and like that was the CG Hub before, right?
Yeah, CG Hub, yeah.
I just went, just like, we're shutting down, like, there, overnight.
It was gone. Oh, God. Talk about drama. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about Seijin forums, and that's like where all the artists were. So you basically, if you were during that time, it was like Craig Mullins was there, like the speed painting forums. And then like all the other people were joining just to be in that speed painting and drawing.
That changed
and then everyone,
life.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And it's funny because everyone who was in that thread now, like we all know those people like in the industry, right?
That's correct. Yeah. All of them basically, you know, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. All of them. It was such a
it
small
was really
group.
Like and a, now a seed. It was really a seed of something massive, you know? Yeah. I still keep all those speed paintings. I love them to death, you know, all those speed paintings.
Yeah,
I just,
same.
I have
same.
Such a melancholic memory about them, you know?
Yeah, you gotta have the archive of the all the work you've done, you know.
Yeah.
Just keep it. Just like it's a journey.
Yeah.
Exactly. No way. Yeah. It actually makes me want to post like some of like the really really old shitty stuff. Is that,
I have so much pride of it. So much pride. Yeah.
You know, quite.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, and I was gonna say, and Craig Mullins was the king of it all. You know, we were all his minions basically.
Yeah, he's the granddaddy of all art, all digital art. Yeah. I wanted to say that quite ironically, all those old shitty speed paintings are probably more valuable than like all those amazing rendered art that we do now, you know?
I fully agree. Fully agree. I mean, the limitations
What do you like? So, I mean, obviously it kind of leads to the big elephant in the room, which is the AI.
Sure.
What is your take on this all? Like, based on, I mean, when was it the first time it kind of made a massive splash? It was like 2022, right? It was like almost 2 years ago.
I'd say three years ago, I would say. Yeah. That's when it hit me. That's when I had a big realization. That's when it hit me. I saw the writing
journey,
on the wall,
right?
Basically. It was a Stable Diffusion for me.
Okay. Okay.
That arrived before Midjourney. And, it was kind of like the hippie version, you know, the free that you could find and install. It was a nightmare to install. And I tested it because I was like, if something is going to take my job, I'll understand how it works. You know? And yes, as soon as I tried it, I was like, yeah, this is game over for a big part of the industry.
Yeah. I had a same realization. That was 2 years ago, Midjourney, when it came out in the summer. Where you could join the beta on like Discord.
Yeah.
And start like, I mean, myself and Ash were just going back and forth about this, like, dude, like, what the fuck? And that was just like, compared to now, it was just like, you were impressed by that. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You know?
So it asks the question, where is it going?
Yeah. Have you seen the Sora release?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
I mean,
where
every
it's going.
Time there's a new release, every time there's a new release, and that's the thing that's funny is that, you know, a lot of art director, production designers know that maybe using AI, you know, they're like, yeah, not hiring concept artists anymore or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
The thing they don't realize that it's coming for them too, by the way.
Yeah, like, it's coming for everybody.
It's coming for everybody. That's what, and that's, you know, the first post I did on Instagram about AI, that's what I said. I said, yeah, I mean, I'm worried about my job, sure, but I'm more worried about what the army is going to do with that. I'm more worried about what countries are going to do with that. I'm more worried about what dictators are going to do with that than my job currently. Yes, it's important, but there are a lot of more worrying things coming with AI, you know, and positive things.
Yeah, I think the most... I was speaking with Steven Zapata. It was like a year and a half ago. That was like right when the updated Stable Diffusion came out, which had like really amazing looking characters. And his assessment was like spot on. It's like, because I asked him, where do you think it's going? And he's like, he was something along the lines of like, I think it's going to go beyond people just prompting. It's just like, it's going to be like TikTok in a way where It reads your behavior and then feeds you automatically with generated stuff as you're looking at it, right?
Yeah.
And then whatever your expression, like face expression, is going to be, whether you liked it or not, is just going to adjust.
Yeah.
And automatically create like kind of your own dystopian reality.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, and the way it's going, I mean, having, you will be able probably to have different filters on any movie you want to watch, or any game you want to watch, or any any skin. You can skin your own game, you can skin your own with whatever, your face everywhere, or whatever fantasy you may have. But the thing is that, to me, the biggest thing that's coming with AI is that it's, there was a split in our industry already. As persons, we, as artists, we were split. There was a part of us that was artistic, and a part of us that was industrial. It's always been like that. Whether it's when we had to deliver speed paintings at a crazy rate, you know, or whether we had to create like a bunch of 3D environments, you know, it's always faster, faster, faster in order to answer production, okay? And that split is becoming less and less tenable. You know, we are both artists and in like industrious people, you know. We are little factories. Concept artists have always been little factories, you know. And that separation is getting deeper with AI. And I think what it's going to create is actually a reevaluation of true art, you know, painted art, like sketch art on paper, something physical, and a reorganization of what we call industrial work, you know, our industry. You know, to me, that's the echoes that are going to, the ripples.
How do you think it's going to affect like social media?
Well, it's already been affecting social media.
I mean,
it
already does, right? But like, what do you think? Because so there's like multiple layers of it all, right? I mean,
so deep.
We spoke about photo bashing and all this kind of, like, remember when photo bashing became a thing? Like, if you were photo bashing at the in the beginning, you're just getting hate left and right.
The witch
like,
hunting,
you fucking cheater.
the witch hunting. So it's funny because, you know, I mean, you and I, you know, we come from speed painting, and I'm like, people were asking me, don't you think it's horrible that people use photos around? And I was like, it's not that people use photo that bothers me. It's the fact that it means that painting is not going to be as looked forward to. You see what I mean? To me, it was more like the death of painting, which I've always loved. And that hurt me. You know, I was like, that's sad. You know, and then I was like, okay, well, I'll do photo bashing. You know, and I've always sucked at it really bad. So when 3D arrived, I was like, screw photo bashing. I'm going straight into 3D, you know, because I sucked so bad at photo bashing. But to me, it was more like the death. But yeah, every time there's like a massive switch, there are witch hunts. There's self-proclaimed messiah that come with them. People that say, follow me. This is the right way. This is the honorable way. And I'm like, okay, great. You go on a freaking step in order to make you shine, not to be a warrior in a shiny armor, but it's irrelevant. With AI, I would say that most of it is irrelevant. You know?
It's also a different world too, right? Because like when 3D was encroaching in into like illustration and concept art, and prior to that photo bashing, and prior to that digital art, I don't think there was that many avenues to like monetize. Let's put it this way, like monetize. The work, right? Because I mean, I don't know if your parents were telling you that when you were growing up, but mine did, saying like, don't be an artist, you're gonna starve on the street.
Of course. I mean, I had to hide to draw when I was a kid.
Yeah,
my dad was furious when he would see me draw, you know. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's funny. And it's like the only avenue that was actually pretty lucrative. So a lot of, I mean, our careers were great, like all things considered, are still.
I feel extremely lucky. Yes.
Right. When you end up working in like Hollywood or for big video games companies, and this is talking about you're putting all like blood, sweat, and tears for like many years and losing, like shaving years from your life basically to get there, you can get in a position where you're like doing really well, you know, like considered. And but I think I agree with your sentiment that there's a lot of this kind of industrialized kind of approach that was only available back then for the longest time, where you would either go into like a video games industry or film. Like if early on you're in film, you're actually doing really well, but you would go to film or like comic book.
Yeah, comic book was kind of the birth of it all. And so funny, you know, I love documentaries and YouTube. That's a great thing about YouTube, that YouTube has started releasing so many documentaries about comic books. And everything that we're going through in many ways, they've been through already. You know, the greed, the industrialization, the mechanization of a lot of things, you know, and there's a lot to learn from the comic book industry, I think. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've not watched many comic book documentaries. So what do you think the parallels?
Watch the one about The Walking Dead. That's amazing.
The Walking Dead?
Okay, yeah. The guy who created The Walking Dead, and the artist that drew it, and then the other artist, because there was infighting and there was, like, of course, money, you know, came in the mix. And
right.
It's very good.
What do you think are the biggest parallels then? Like,
overall is that artists are, in general, are very prone to be abused. and to be used, you know, and I think there's a growing up that needs to happen. But the thing is that there's a psychological connection with that. It's like, we grow up as artists because we want to prove people what we do is nice. You know, that's the first sensation we're trying to convey, you know. And then what comes with that is the desire to be always good towards someone that's kind of parenting us, you know. And I think the future for artists, and I've been saying that for years, but I haven't even been able to do it for myself as well as I would like, is to grow up and to take in hand who you are as an artist, and be your own manager and become the manager, basically, you know. And I think with the tools that are coming today, there's more and more freedom to that. You know, there's young guys, you know, that are doing Blender short films. And it's still very hard to monetize because of the big corporations that are holding everything, you know. But I think there's still room for growing for a lot of us as artists, you know, in that direction. So I said that's the biggest parallel with comic book is as artists creating amazing things is to grow up and not be used, basically. I would say that.
Yeah, I mean, there's the big industry of like artists that have Patreon accounts and
I think that's amazing. Yeah.
Kickstarter, monetizing through YouTube and Instagram, or using social media to build your kind of fan base, and then, you know, offering prints and merchandise. I mean,
I'm a huge fan of Ashley Wood. You know, I mean, I've been since when I was a kid. I mean, reading. I mean, I don't know how old he is now, but. Either he started young,
he's an OG.
But I've always been a huge fan of his, and not necessarily just for his artwork, which is mind-boggling, you know, but this is for his business sense, you know. Mm. And there's a few artists like that I really admire for that, and that I wish I could learn from, you know.
Another one is James Jean.
James Jean,
that guy is
more, but equally of a giant that has come through his own creation, you know?
Yeah. And then from the younger generation, like I've mentioned this so many times, that it's a proud moment for me, obviously, to see someone like starting and then growing to be huge on social media, like Ross Tran. Ross Draws channel.
Yeah.
You know, when I had a podcast with him, he was like barely like 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, and he was just he was just releasing those, you know, funny, like, you know, snappy, cool kind of quick tutorial videos.
Yeah.
And now he's like millions of people follow him and his work.
Yeah, I noticed that as well, is that there's more and more interest in art, you know? I think that's something, I think that's a very positive development, you know. There are dark things that come with that, you know. I mean, artists tend to be very cliquish, you know, and you have like witch hunts and stuff like that. We love that, apparently, you know, for some reason. But the positive aspect to it is that when you paint and you draw, you know, you're not, you know, killing someone else, or you're actually thinking about things, you know, about light, about what subject you're mm-hmm. painting, about things like that. So I feel that's the democratization of art, I feel, is like a very positive development, you know.
Yeah, where do you think this is going to... I mean, obviously, there's the production avenue, like the industrialization part that you mentioned, that it's basically an automation of everything that costs
money. That's exactly
money, right.
That's exactly right.
I think the cost...
You perfectly summed it up, yeah.
Yeah, I think my like, this is not a prediction. This is just the reality is going to be that the only cost of entry to make creative work is going to be the cost of computing, really, yeah. really just the cost of yeah. computing, right?
Sure, yeah.
And then,
but I think, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, what's your thoughts on like how do you think this is gonna, what the landscape? Let's put on the fucking wizard's hats. We're like in Harry Potter movie or whatever. Like whatever. We're just predicting the future, right? What's going to happen? And let's give it like a realistic timeline of 5 years. Because 10 years from now, it's like impossible to predict, right?
So what I can assure you is that no one can tell. Right? Anyone who says otherwise.
Come on, right now, let's try harder. Let's just be fucking wizards for a second.
Let me finish. Because that's something I think about every day. Let me finish because I'm not going to leave you there. But the thing is that I think about it a lot, you know, especially when I see my 9-year-old daughter who wants to paint. Yeah. And she's like, I want to write stories. I want to paint. I want to do a comic book. I'm like, oh, God. You know? And I'm thinking, well, there's two ways I can do this. I can go either like my parents, my dad, you know, especially, who was like, don't draw. Don't do it. You know, if I see you draw, you'll be punished or whatever. You know, I can either be like this, you know, which I won't, obviously, you know, but I thought about it. I was like, should I just make sure that but the thing is that she goes into a specific industry or becomes a lawyer or whatever, but even lawyers are not protected from it. That's the thing.
No, yeah.
There's not one industry nowadays that may not be touched by AI. None. Zero. So the thing that I thought about is like, where is the value? The value is in the personality, you know, is like your personality. If you're a douchebag or if you're someone that people like to work with, you know, and I think that's a massive value, you know. Your intelligence, like your culture, like how much you know about everything, about, you know, how well read you are or how cultured you are. And also the basic skills as an artist, I think. And that's why I've been painting so much lately, is because I've realized that the most valuable skill that's going to come in the future as artists is going to be all the basic skills that we've kind of tried to get away from when we're doing industrial things, because of that separation of industry. And so I think that all the basics is where the safety is at, you know, like reading art books, understanding about art, learning about art, you know, painting, drawing, sketching from life. I think all these things are going to become, if you want to become an artist, and I think, and also a business, you know, I think business is a big one that most artists forget about, you know. And so the only thing I can predict is that you're going to have all these people like those Ross Trans, those all those artists that I follow online, or those guys that do documentary for comic books on YouTube or whatever. I think these are going to become, brand names, you know, big brand mm-hmm. names that are going to have massive value because there's going to be a massive following. When you have 1 million people following you, I mean, this is money, you know, and there's going to be battles about this. There's going to be choices, and we're going to be people on YouTube are going to be abused by YouTube, of course, you know, but there's still going to be ways to monetize this. And some people go away from YouTube. Some people go on different platforms too nowadays, you know, like you say.
Yeah. I mean, the reality of social media is pretty obvious. Like if it's free, then you're at a product, right? So you have to kind of accept that whatever
Correct.
You do.
Correct.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen to copyrights though? Like that's a big one, right? Copyrights.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that copyright laws, you know, are in a way that after 100 years, you know, whatever I've created, you know, in my life, well, most of it is owned by either the mouse or other studios, you know. but
the South for Park the stuff, mouse.
Exactly. But
the South
for the
Park
rest
version.
Exactly. But for the rest of it, I mean, the stuff I own nowadays, I've created on my own, in 100 years, I'd be everybody's, you know. So ultimately... Yeah. we're all going to end up in that big melting pot of data that art is a part of. Images, you know, our likeness, it's all data. It's all going to be monetized. It's all going to be sold and resold and revalued. And so, yeah, we're...
Yeah, but that's...
It's
that's
a little dystopian, you know, but... Yeah.
But that's like, that's already exists, right? Like the everything becomes public domain after 100 years, basically,
yeah.
Technically speaking. But like in the more immediate term, if the cost of creation or cost of creativity, let's say, goes down to zero, or cost of production of products go down to zero, I mean, that's going to have a massive implications to things like TV or film or video games. Because, like, why would you pay $70 for a video game if you can just prompt one with your own ideas and it's going to be as amazing as the one that created by, like, Larian or Blizzard or, you know, Naughty Dog or, you know, whatever.
And customized for you. I think that's a big thing. Right. It's going to be customized just for your needs and your psychological profile, all that stuff, you know.
Yeah,
I think it's terrifying. That's what I would say.
Yeah,
I think it's scary.
I'm just curious, like what it's gonna mean to everything, because it's like we're looking in like a very enclosed cosmos, right? Of art.
It's a microcosm.
Because like microcosm. That's the word I was looking
for.
Yeah. I mean, once the things we're talking about are possible. I mean, I think everything else in the world will be in the similar vein, like lawyers, doctors, all the all the white collar work,
especially anything expensive. You know, all the medical field is going to be hit really seriously because it's so expensive. You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is to look back at the past. You know, if you look at the auto industry, you know, it started just with like. Maybe the wife, I remember like the wife of the BMW guy, you know, who was doing stuff like machines to get grain and stuff like that. She wanted to be able to go see her sister or whatever, you know, and they built the car and then she took the car just to go see her sister when it was supposed to be just a tool, you know?
Yeah.
And then at some point you have so many factory workers with Ford, you know, and then they replaced all these people with machines, you know, and you had people rebelling, taking the forks and be like, they were called the Luddites, you know, and they were like, no, don't take our jobs, whatever. Well, I mean, history has not proven itself very well for those people, you know,
right.
Because now no one builds cars by hand, you know, or very few little parts, you know. So, and what it does is that the world has to readjust to different part of where the needs are. And I think the needs are, once again, that's why I think focus on your core abilities, you know, whether it's humane or like artistic even, you know, I think it's still going to be extremely valuable because whatever needs are going to come up are going to need those kind of things, you know.
Right. Hopefully. Until we get fooled by real-time, realistic humans created by AI that are more convincing than actual humans. I think that when that's happened, that's very dystopian. But I think until then, yes, like a human personalities and communities will matter a lot, right?
Well, if you want to go that far, if they really, that's where you want to go. You know,
I wonder how far that is. Is it like 10 years from now?
I mean,
or sooner?
I highly recommend a book. It's called Homo Deus. It's by Yuval Harari. Okay.
Okay.
A lot of these answers are answered in that book, you know. And it's called Homo Deus because at some point, you know, machine, humans merging, it's going to happen sooner than we think, you know. And at that point, possibilities are going to be very different from the limitations that we have currently, whether it's physical, you know, like breathing, flying, whatever, you know. But then also thinking, like the needs that we have today, you know, about feeding our family and making sure that we have enough money in the bank are going to be relevant 50 years from now, you know. And I cannot predict where they're going to be, but it's going to be a lot about that merging, you know, of AI and ourselves. We're just either AI is going to take off from this planet and leave us alone, or it's going to merge with us, you know.
I mean, we're kind of already are with this, right? With the phone.
Completely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's, yeah. The funniest part is just like trying to pinpoint and predict anything. Like it felt impossible doing that 10 years, like 15 years ago, thinking where the industry is going to go. And now it's just like completely just, you're just might as well just throw darts in the air and see where it lands, you know?
Yeah. And we're at the mercy of powers, you know, like big corporations again, that are developing AI, but also governments that are completely behind on that subject, you know, and we're at the mercy of this storm that's happening in slow motion, you know, and it's very hard to predict anything, you know?
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, you've mentioned like honing in on personal skills. I agree. Like, I think there's going to be a niche industry that's related to like traditional art. I think that much bigger industry, and I mean, again, I'm not even predicting, I'm just thinking loud. I'm not sure how much of it's going to be true. I see an opportunity where your sort of like personal brands will matter. Building personal brands, building your own IPs. The word IP doesn't matter if you don't have people who are actually recognizing it as an IP, right? Like you can just say something is an IP until you have an audience that actually follows you for it, right?
First you have to have a product out, you know, and then you have to have people look at the product, you know.
And
that's where there's, I mean, it's very hard to break through, you know, and it always comes down to similar things as before, you know, whether it's during Sargent times or I mean, it's like there's a hype that comes with it, you know, like how hyped can you be hyped, you know, how it's also timing, like you said earlier on, like an artist arriving at the right time doing the right product, you know, it's not easy. I think it's very hard to be to do that, you know. A few people have done it, you know? And even then they did not necessarily succeed.
It's like the melting pot of timing, luck, and by luck I mean having enough of skills and enough of like clear mind to notice opportunities and take a leap to grab them.
Yeah, and to have the personality and the strength to support this, because I mean, it's not easy once you have something big to keep it on your shoulders, you know. That's why, I mean, it's a big responsibility to have an IP after too, you know, and to deliver it. And that's why I admire people like singers that are very successful and they are able to really keep going for years and years and years without becoming either stretched faces or like, you see what I mean? Like people that because some artists, they just crumble under the insecurities. All artists are insecure, all of them, you know?
Yeah.
It's how you manage those insecurities, you know? I admire artists that are able to manage both, you know, the talent, the work, and the insecurities, and the business. I mean, it's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah, you just have to not read comments.
Completely. But at the same time, those comments are what sells on social media, you know?
True.
So the negative stuff is going to always go on to the surface, you know?
That's true. Yeah, like it's something I've heard recently that like on YouTube, generally speaking, the thumbnails that have negative connotation, like you're giving a negative look to something that's positive, even though the positive video is positive, makes for more click through.
There's no doubt about that.
Sensationalizing stuff is like always.
We are highly manipulated, and that's why once again I think, I've learned that the hard way, you know, is that. And that's why I think it's very important to develop yourself as an artist. That's why I keep saying, like, and not just the art. I'm talking about psychologically. Like, how can you become more balanced? How can you get smarter, not be, and be business savvy? I think it's all these elements slowly that you need to intake, you know? But the most important thing is your psychological profile. It's like, where do you come from? How were you raised? You know, how much suffering did you have to endure in order to become an artist? You know, and do you have the strength to support that once you're successful? You know?
I want to hone in on that in a second, but I want to come back to one thing. So we've kind of briefly discussed about the rift about AI in the industry, where things are going, and like the reality of what companies that hire artists do. Obviously, their number one priority will be to deliver a product and cut corners where they can. And if they can cut corners by getting automated illustrations that are done like for a fraction of the cost, there's no reason why they wouldn't do it, right? I'm focused on directing more recently, pretty much last 2 years. With the exception of The Joker 2, which is the last film project that I've done, I've basically kind of thrown myself into directing and hoping it's going to stick.
Very good move. I think it's a very, very good move. It's a move I'm making too. So I think it's a very, very important move. Yeah.
But what do you think about the industry sentiment? And it's like, I understand. So I'll just set the stage. I completely understand the angle, and I even support it to a very high degree, that there's something fucked up going on in terms of like how those AI algorithms have been created, like basically farming data from everywhere without consent. There's like leaked DMs coming from Midjourney and Stable Diffusion. Like there's a lot of stuff going on, right? But there's also just a set reality of things, and making things right is almost always a kind of a lost cause in a way, especially for something that is just so massively disruptive. So I wonder, like, what do you think about this whole rift? Because there are people like yourself, even when I spoke to Steven and a bunch of others, especially those who are like really affected by AI, none of them have like really negative view. Maybe I'm mischaracterizing their opinions, but to me it was just like there's an ethical kind of recoil reaction to the technology, which is completely understandable. But there's also like a setting in reality and sort of like a thinking process, okay, like how much can realistically be done, and we obviously have to push to get things done, but does it really matter? And like I wonder what's your stance on not really what do you think should be done from like technology point of view, because I think to me at least that cat is out of the box basically.
Yeah.
But from a perspective of like this kind of industry rift, which we both, like as you mentioned, went through numerous times on just much smaller scale.
For sure. So I think first of all, there's one thing is that all the people that you're mentioning, whether it means myself, Steven, particularly Steven, people like this, it's people, I mean, we've been through the freaking ringer many times. Like I'm talking like in our industry, we've been brutalized left and right. You know, especially if you work in the movie industry for 10 years, you know, you will be brutalized.
Dude,
you know?
I love your fucking choices of word. Fucking chef's kiss, dude.
But it's true, you know? I mean, you're talking about Steven. I mean, that guy is a warrior, you know? He's been through 1 billion battles of illustrations, if such thing happens, you know? So,
yeah.
So it's the kind of guy, and I feel somewhat similar about myself, that I feel like if you put Steve like on the street tomorrow, I can assure you that by the end of the week, he'll find a way to make money.
Yeah.
You know, he'll find a way because of all the things we've been through, we've been trained to not say yes to any budget that's given to us. You know, we've been trained to refuse budgets that are ridiculous, you know. We've been trained to fight for ourselves, you know. And maybe when you're in the studio, like full time, it's not the same. You're much more protected, which is what they want, by the way. But there's something about being a free agent for a while that teaches you a lot of brutal lessons. That's what I mean by that, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So I think the first reaction, I mean, at least for myself and for Steven, I said earlier on, my reaction was like, okay. Well, concept art is potentially game over. That's why I still think that way. I still think that there's a concept art as we knew it is gone. That's my point of view.
For sure.
There's something else that's coming, you know, and right now it's a form of AI. Yes, there are like a legal horror going on with our work. I mean, a lot of people complain about it, but I mean, a big part of the work that's been ingested by those AI is a lot of our work, you know, my work, your work, I can assure you is in there. I know it's in there. Yeah. And, but at the same time, like, okay, well, there's a shift of cards.
Does it bother you that it's in there?
So the thing is that I've never had a lot of ego, you know, maybe at least in my eyes, maybe my work says differently. just saying that shows that maybe I have a lot of ego, you know, but, exactly. But I always felt like, you know, I'm 50. How much more do I have left to live? Truthfully.
Right.
You know, I don't know if it's much, you know, and that's why I go back to another, but that's why I feel like, okay, well, if my personality, my artwork has been stolen, but is part of a big zeitgeist and it's going to be there for the rest of the humanities, why not? If that's where I end up, you know, why not, you know? But the thing that, and that's why I'm coming back more and more to physical art, is because what's more important than this for me, you know, all the years I worked on in the industry or in studio or whatever, is the legacy I leave to my kids. You know, like, is my daughter going to have a painting on the wall that I did, you know, when she has, when she's 80, you know, I would hope so, more than she's going to watch a freaking movie that has topped in over a month and then collapsed and no one talked about it ever again, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing, is like, it has awakened in me more than anger or hate. I don't think I feel any of it. What it has awakened in me is like a realignment of what truly matters in life. And what truly matters in life ever since I've been a kid is creating. As long as I can create, whether it's freaking painting using seashell pasta or whatever, or it is painting or it is doing concept art for movies, I think I'll be happy. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for me to say that because I've worked all these years and people may think, oh, well, but he's done all this. So now he said he has money or whatever. Nothing is ever said. I'm a concept artist. I'm not a freaking banker. Okay. It's not like I have a billion saved in my bank account, you know, so people's reality. I mean, I think reality is very twisted for a lot of people too, you know, like I'm an artist. I'm not a billionaire, you know, and at that point of my life, seeing AI coming, seeing all this coming, I don't feel necessarily fear, although I made a switch in my career. So I had some fear, but it's more of an awakening. What truly matters to me? Sorry for the long-winded answer, you know, but
No. Keep going. I love to listen. Yeah, it's more what's in your head, really.
Yeah, and as I'm talking, I feel like I'm in therapy too. I'm bouncing this off you because I'm like, how is he gonna react to the crazy things I'm saying, you know? And how can we go from there? But I feel that my family is what centers me, you know, and when I see my kids that want to create, I'm like, what are they going to need for the future? And it's a very hard question to answer. Yeah.
You know, with kids, it's obviously our responsibility. If you have kids, it's your responsibility to put them in the best position that they can be, to be the most equipped to have a wonderful life, right? But the choices they're going to make is the choices they're going to make. I truly believe that they just need to make choices, even if they're bad choices.
Yeah,
because lessons learned early, especially like failing really hard early on, will prepare them for a better life. You know, later down the road.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Be a good person is a good start, you know.
I totally agree with you on like. I mean, I think everyone has like this kind of, either everyone will have or already had this kind of mea culpa, with progression of technology. I think, at least. But the question I constantly keep asking myself is like, if there's a certain skill that we have. That's a technical skill, not our mental skill, that can be so easily replaced, then is it that valuable in the first place? You know?
That's correct. That's entirely correct. I think you're completely hitting the nail on the head here. It's your mental abilities and skills are going to be much more valuable than your technical skills. I agree.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think about AI, you know, let's say you can write a prompt and it creates a movie. You know, let's say it happens. You know, being a good writer, although being a good writer could be replaced by AI too potentially, but being a good writer, have good ideas, or like being cultured is truly going to make you a master at this art. Let's say if we remove the emotional stuff, okay, let's say AI becomes the way of creating in the future, which it very well maybe. Then being mentally powerful is going to be the best weapon you can have. Extremely creative, extremely cultured, being able to convey complex ideas, you know, humane ideas and things like this. You know?
Yeah. So how do you become stronger? How do you build that mental muscles? Like, what did you do to build those mental muscles?
So, I've been in therapy for 10 years. That's one. That's one, because I was really a freaking mess.
Right.
You know? But the big thing, and I think that's where people have it completely wrong about AI. I think where AI can shine, like truly shine, is education. To me, that's the big thing. To me, AI, because education is a mess, you know, it's the system that people use for education nowadays is rooted in like Charlemagne's time, you know, which is a long time ago. Okay. Things have changed a lot.
There's some exceptions. You know? Like I've heard Finland has, for example, like an amazing kind of completely radical to a current educational system, and they have like some amazing results coming out of it. So
I saw that, and it's like one over the whole planet, you know.
Right.
The other way you can have great education nowadays is that if you have tons of money, you know, you have all those dictators, they don't send their kids to their homeschool, you know, they send kids to Paris and London, you know what I mean? It's nowadays it's either through money you get that education, or you get I heard about that in Finland, you know, or through different schools. In America, it's a mess too, you know, where if you have money, then you have good schools. If you don't, it's very hard to get good education. But I think AI is going to be where the power lies into AI is education. I did a test for fun, you know, I took Stable Diffusion, you know, I did a painting, like a real painting. I took it into Stable Diffusion and I typed the landscape I did, you know, and I say painted by Sargent. And what it came back to me was mind-boggling. I could tell with the image that was sent back to me that I could basically backward engineer how Sargent could have maybe done my painting if he had been me, basically.
Right.
You know, imagine the power that it is. Imagine that you need to go into therapy, for example, and you call Freud and like, hey, please, Freud, can you please give me for free therapy for the next 5 years? You don't think people are going to get better? People become better? I think that's where the big unused part of AI is going to be, is education and teaching and learning things. I think there's a massive, interesting thing that's there. The rest, I agree, it's destructive for now. Yeah.
Yeah, there's an interesting, I don't know how much you played with ChatGPT, but I feel like ChatGPT was amazing when it was, like the ChatGPT-4 specifically was amazing when it was released. And now it's kind of like stripped down the version for whatever reason, like feels worse than it's ever been. I don't know why, like it's just degrading. But even though, take that away, and take away the fact that it hallucinates and it comes up with like shit that doesn't exist and is wrong on a lot of things. Like, don't ask it history questions. It will come up with some shit that is probably not true because all the information is gathered from internet, let's say. And that's all the good information, like actual historical data and all the fucking flat earthers equally. You know what I mean? So there's a big kind of error margin that happens, but I'm pretty sure that over time that's going to get course corrected, whether for good or bad.
Specifically,
for things like history, that's
very debatable. Much so.
However, let's say you want to write you're working in Blender and you want to do some cool stuff or come up with like functionality, or you have two different softwares. Like, man, I wish there was an app that could connect those two and make it so that I can do this thing, right? And with something like ChatGPT, you can do it. If you can train your, like, even just by going through the motions, actually, you're training your brain to think critically and connect
dots,
right? You're
programming your brain.
Right, yeah. And so, and then the cool part is, like, you can ask it to give you step by step, and it's going to be like a junior level, intern level, kind of entry level thing. More recently, it actually gives you like links to videos that it finds on YouTube as well. So it's kind of like a baby version of search engine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of gives you, this is something that I think universities are great at. And a lot of like, there's this question that people ask, like, should I go to university to be an artist? Like, should I go to art school to be an artist? Or can I learn from internet by myself? Some people will learn from internet by themselves. And actually, vast majority of those people will not even ask this question because they were already learning, right? If you're asking question, that probably you need structure. So you need to go to art school. But obviously, paying fucking $200K in US to get an art degree, it's absolutely stupid right now, I would say. Yeah. But with something like ChatGPT, you can train your brain to have that structure. Kind of force yourself to have that structure and have that critical thinking, because you can start from like very simple question, you know, I want to do X, what should I do? And it gives you answers. And if you think critically, okay, well, let's take the first one. Can you kind of elaborate and give me more ideas, you know? And you kind of go down the rabbit hole of things.
Yeah.
So I agree on the education part. It's absolutely, you're spot on that for sure.
And I think that would be a positive way of using it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're humans, and humans, the first think about making money and stealing each other. You know?
I want to talk about the mental strength next, because I mean, I said I want to hone on this. Like, you've mentioned therapies and whatnot, but do you have your own kind of mantra that you go through life when it comes to, like, how do I build that muscle? Because it's a muscle, you know, like being resilient to things. Doesn't just happen because you think about being resilient to things, right? Like, something either needs to happen, or you have to kind of force yourself to do things.
I really think, I mean, my only answer is therapy. I mean, because I think as a human, you know, we all are grown up little kids, you know. If when you grew up, you didn't have the structure necessary in order to have structure as an adult, I think it's almost close to impossible to catch it back. That's my take. The only way to catch it back is to be, quote unquote, parented again, you know?
Right.
And I know that when I grew up, you know, my family was a mess, you know? And I'm still at 50 trying to fight those defects that came from my childhood, you know? And the only way I can get help is by seeing a professional, you know, which in a few years may become an AI professional, you know? It's very plausible, you know, I'm talking about education. But I think I wish I had, you know, when I see all these YouTube videos of guys that are like super big, super tough, you know, and they're like, yeah, I take protein and then I'm such a strong dude, whatever. You know, it's all, people need to realize that it's all a freaking smoke and mirror. Those guys are not tough. They're not, they may be very successful, but I can assure you that even if they show a face of being very successful, like on super big podcasts, you know, that we see whatever, I can assure you that when they go home and they have a problem with their kids crying or whatever, they're like, oh, fuck, what am I going to do? Parents are parents, you know, you face similar issues. You're a teenager, you face horrible issues, stress, you know, and the way you look and all these things. And I think that until you've had like someone helping you structure your brain, I don't think there's a miracle solution to structure your brain. At least, no.
Okay, aside from
educating yourself, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you're making here. Like, there's always a caveat. It's like you can find shitty therapists, and like if you stay with them too long, you're fucked. You're even worse.
You're even worse than you were starting with. Yeah. You know, and that's the other thing. And to be able to have a therapist, you need to have insurance, health insurance. You know, just that alone. Yeah. You know, if you don't, well, too bad. You know, especially in America. You know. And like you say, finding the right person is extremely difficult because you have to trust that person would be basically doing brain surgery, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Do you find doing difficult things irons your like mental strength?
So, yes, as you were saying that, I was thinking, I forgot something. So it's perfect. It's okay. True. And that's why I started being an artist when I was a kid. You know, I had trouble in my family, you know, parents divorcing, all that stuff. My escape and my mantra, you're talking about mantra, that was it. That was drawing, that was painting. We all know, you know, when we're doing art, the reason why we keep going back to it is because it puts us in a zone, puts us in a flow mode, you know. And I think that is highly therapeutic. And whether you're an artist or not, I mean, you can start painting at any age, whether you've done art in your life or not, and it will be therapeutic because I think it activates multiple parts of your brain and takes you out of depression, takes you out of PTSD, or you name it. So yes, I mean, that's it. So that's the that's the good side of the cross to bear that we have, is that when we do art, we heal ourselves, I think.
I wonder, I agree, there's a very therapeutic element of being in that flow state where you're not even thinking about time, the world, or anything else. You're kind of just doing, and you're just focused, like completely focused of doing. That doesn't need to be necessarily art. It could be anything else, right?
True.
Whether it's creative or not, but like the flow state is a real thing and exists. There's also... I'm pretty sure there are times where it just becomes an escapism as well.
I fully agree. I mean, I am 100% with you on that. Like, I had that phase. You know, I told you I didn't do any art for 1 year, you know?
Yeah.
A year ago, I had that phase where I was like, I don't want to do art anymore because it's kind of a dark hole where I disappear and then 3 hours mm-hmm. have passed, you know? So, and I want to do physical things. I want to go out. I want to go hike and things like that. And I think balancing those two is what gives you strength, I think, you know, being able to run on a regular basis or do some kind of physical exercise and still do art as well, you know, and be around loved ones. You know, I think that's what gives you strength. You know? But like anything like mental training or like protein shakes or whatever.
If you're working out like a lot, I understand protein shake. You don't really.
It's another form of escape too, you know.
Just depends on your goals, I guess. Yeah.
That's.
I mean,
exactly
look.
Right,
I. By the way, there's. I think the part of it that it's like it's funny when you say this and like I'm envisioning pictures. It's like there's certain cut of people that are like. I think what you do is inspiring, and like for someone like because, if you can force yourself to work out every day or like regularly.
And by the way, I'm saying that, but I admire some of those guys, by the way.
Yeah. that's what I'm getting at. Because I know you do. And it's like, there's an immense mental strength you have to have to like be consistent, right? And this is the same with art and whatever. But there's just like a fuck ton of grifters too. They're just like, hey, but also just buy my product, right?
That's exactly right. That's
which
exactly
is like
right.
For each their own, I guess, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I go to the gym and I lift weights and I take protein in the morning, so I'm part of the problem, you know.
So. You're part of the problem. I wanted to follow up also.
But that's not what gives mental strength. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. No.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I think it depends. Discipline is the right word. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it
definitely gives discipline. But don't you think discipline is kind of a mental strength? Because like not everyone can like is disciplined.
Yeah, it's a muscle.
Like you have to actually.
It's a muscle.
Yeah.
It's a muscle that is taught to you as a kid. That's what I believe. I believe that discipline, I mean, you can learn at any age, you know, but I think it's harder when you're an old dog to learn that skill. You know, I know.
You think it's a valuable skill, discipline?
I think it's an extremely valuable skill. It's a skill that I didn't value enough for many years. Mm-hmm. I'd say that was my biggest fault for many years. Yeah.
So if you're a lazy bum, like how do you get disciplined then?
Well, there's different motive, and that's where psychological aspect comes in place again. It's like, what is driving you? Why do you want to be successful? I know that right. I wanted to be successful when I was young because as an artist in France, you're valued as a bum, you know? And the only artists that are valued in France or in Europe and maybe in general is artists that are on TV, you know? So mm-hmm. like, I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be making movies so I can be famous.
I'm going to be an influencer.
Exactly. I didn't have much more motivation. So that's what gave me drive. And the psychological thing behind it was that I wanted to prove my dad that I was good. You know, that was the truth that I discovered through therapy, is that I wanted to impress my dad, you know. But that's not enough to be happy. That's the issue. So wanting to impress someone is not enough to be happy. You have to find motivations that are going further than that inside yourself, you know.
I think
discipline, that's where discipline helps, is you cannot have discipline if you don't have a clear goal, I think, basically.
Right, yeah.
I think it's hard.
Yeah, that I agree on that. Yeah, you have to have a goal because otherwise you're disciplined towards nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to have a goal that you want to go towards. It's going to be difficult enough for you to actually have to be disciplined to actually achieve it, you know?
Yeah. But why reach that goal too? You know, that's the question.
Right. Right. Do you think, because we were talking about mental strength, I fucking love that topic, by the way. It's on my mind all the time. Especially the older you get, it's on your mind all the time.
Big time, yeah.
Do you think like really difficult life moments get you, like actually build that that mental callus, you know, like the fucking, you know, when you're deadlifting a bar and you get those calluses on your palms, you know, that look like you're fucking holding a cactus.
I think there's truth to it, but I think there's a price to pay too. So I think it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you stronger and it also makes you more sensitive, you know. You know, when I was young, I mean, and you know, I was like, girls, whatever, you know, and then at some point I got dumped, you know. And I really, from that day, I really took much more care into people I was with, my relationships. But so the pain really made me a much better person altogether, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, it made me more fragile and more insecure. So so I think it's a double-edged sword, you know. I think any pain comes with strengthening and weakening. Yeah.
If you would have to put the most difficult thing you've ever done, mentally or otherwise, do you think that built your mental strength or was like, again, yeah, like so, a 50-50?
Yes, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the first short film I directed, you know, years ago. It was 10, 15 years ago. That was the hardest thing I had ever done on all levels. You know, I basically flattened my bank account. I got into depression, you know. It took me a long while before I could release it with somewhat of a sentiment of pride, you know, which even once released, I barely had, you know, because what was I thinking, you know? That my first film was going to be good. What the hell was I thinking, you know? And it did both. It strengthened me over a long period of time. There's mistakes that I don't do anymore, no doubt. But also, it made me very insecure for a very long time. So what I said is true. Is like the strengthening doesn't necessarily become obvious right away. That's the difficult part.
Yeah, because it's very difficult to put it in like once you go through something fucking difficult, like the only immediate thoughts you're mostly going to have is like, well, if you accomplish it, it's like, yes, I fucking did it. There is like a surge of dopamine, right? Sure. But that goes away quickly, you know? That's just an enzyme in your brain.
And that's then in the best case scenario. if you have that dopamine, it means that you did something you're proud of, you know?
Yeah, exactly. When you do something like extremely difficult and you finish it, if you're proud, like, there's, let's say you're proud of it, but that goes away. But there's like an immediate, like why did I, like, there's like an immediate cost, like whether you're, you know, exhausted or battered
fucking
fragile or whatever, right? And it's very difficult to put things into perspective because, like, there are things that you might have gone through that are becoming a life lessons that you will only fully realize like 5 or 10 years ahead of time.
That's,
you know?
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that, exactly. The pain is not necessarily right away a proven lesson, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a very difficult thing to grasp, because like I've went through like a couple of moments like that of myself. Like doing the Linkin Park Lost video was so difficult. That was, and then, oh my god, that was like, holy shit, what have I done? You know, like myself and Emily, when we kind of took on that project, it was just probably one of the most challenging projects that I've ever done. You know,
I'm not
there's
surprised.
Always this like, I wish I had more time. I wish I had, like, you know, there's always that.
Exactly.
But there's a, like, in hindsight, there's just so much I've learned through it too, even just mentally, mindset shift and thinking about things. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned, like, when I asked you, like, what's the most, I'll tell you the reason why I asked this, like, what's the most difficult thing you've ever done? I thought you were going to say like sailing through Atlantic, you know?
No.
And you go like straight to fucking directing. It's like, my guy, like, holy shit, you're so right.
Well, if we want to go and talk about things that are outside of work, the most difficult thing I've ever done is trying to raise my kids.
Yeah.
That is, is by far.
That's why you have, like, all the gray hair right now.
Correct. That's correct. Like, way more difficult than any artistic endeavor I've ever had in my whole life. You know?
Yeah. It's incredibly challenging. And I mean, it depends. Like, if you're just like a deadbeat dad who doesn't give a fuck, then like,
well,
nothing is
that
really
too.
Difficult, right?
That's exactly right. But and that's the thing I was trying to remember last time, is that what you were telling me is like about the difficulty of creating like a big project. And the thing is that I think in the perfect world as artists, what you want is to have enough money. And I know some artists are at that level, by the way. I met a few of them that are at that level. Is that you create something, you pour your soul and heart into it, and then you take a break. You take a freaking break. You know, you go and spend five months in Tahiti. Okay? Some artists, I'm talking about like big level people, directors or whatever, that have been through the ringer themselves, by the way, you know?
Yeah.
They were able to go and break that threshold where they do have breathing. You see what I mean? The thing that in our, I know that in your life, we don't have that luxury. You know, I finished my short film, my bank account was flat, you know, Amy was pregnant. We had to pay for medical bills and there was no way I would have a break after my short film. No way. I had zero time to enjoy it. But ideally in a creative world, that's what you would want. Like where you pour yourself into for 2-3 years in a project, and then you have a year to breathe, you know?
Yeah. That
creates mental strength. That would help.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to add to that, the most interesting thing I also realized talking to some people like that is that the projects that they embark, like not even mentioning the shit that they went through, like, cause it's mind boggling, like how much mental strength you have to have. Like talking about directing, I mean, you've been on a set of films many times. Like once you're on the film set where you see all those lights, the whole crew, and you're tens of thousands of dollars just every fucking minute just goes to the burner.
Yep.
Like how much pressure and stress there is, like guaranteed 99.99% of people who comment on YouTube is like, oh, this movie was shit, would fucking crumble under the pressure in the first 5 minutes, right?
Well, they would have crumbled way before that.
Yeah, exactly. Way before that. So there's like, there's a massive amount of like mental and physical strength you have to even operate on that level. And then when that's you correct. Do, that's when your skills are valued, and then you can take like a fucking, and you also have to be lucky, like lucky enough to do for correct sure. project oh. that eventually fucking gets, you know, recognized or win awards and whatnot.
Cause that's correct.
You know,
that's correct.
For every super successful director, there's hundreds of thousands of them who just failed miserably, you
yeah,
know?
Correct. Yeah.
So it's definitely, yeah, there's a big price to pay, but then, yeah, you can take a few months off but then you're like fully well-deserved, you know?
Correct.
Yeah. I never look at those folks as like, oh, like they're such a good life. It's like, I think they worked their asses off, even if they got lucky. Like, there has to be skill. Like, there's
absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder exactly. how many big shot directors there are right now that have a balanced family life. You know, I think maybe there's a few, but not many.
probably not many. Yeah.
There's a few. Yeah, I know many. There's a few, but not many. Yeah.
Yeah, directing is fucking horribly difficult. That's for sure.
But it's fun too.
It is fun.
It's so much fun. It's so exhilarating. You know, some of the best moments in my life, aside from my family, you know, I mean, were directing.
Yeah, I mean, you know that working with like a crew, right? Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, working with people, especially if the people you work with are great people, you know.
Yeah.
And like this kind of energy you get from getting the best out of them, you know.
Yeah.
Is really exhilarating. I agree. And then just seeing your kind of ideas come to life by like a collective, you know, effort.
That's correct. Yeah. And there's other ways you can do that. You know, once again, I mentioned Ashley Wood earlier on. You know, there's people that create on in different formats, you know, they are the master of their own. And that's what I was saying at the beginning of this discussion is, I think that's the ultimate goal for artists, whether you direct, whether you have your own channel on YouTube, or whether you have your Patreon, or whether you have your company that makes pottery, I don't know, you know, whatever it is, you know, is to feel like you are the master of yourself and able to succeed with that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to leave this conversation without coming back to your journey through Atlantic. Like, if you don't want to talk about it, then you don't have to, but I need to ask
you.
No, we can.
Like, no, I don't mind.
How was that? Because,
honestly, that's
days.
A whole podcast. That's okay, a whole podcast.
I mean, I don't know how much time you have, but I can talk forever.
I swear it's a whole podcast of its own. So I grew up sailing, you know, as a kid, you know, like an optimist, you know, those tiny sailboats and then 420s and basically like different levels. And then when I became a teenager, I was a rebel and became a windsurfer. And I know that in Poland, windsurfing is massive, by the way. Windsurfer right now, actually, that's in the top three world champions windsurfing, you know.
And that it's funny you say that, because it clicks immediately, because I grew up on the coast, right? And I would go for like a walk, like my mom would walk across the boulevard, which is like a seafront, and we would just go for like an hour we would go for walks like 3-4 times a week for an hour, right?
Yeah.
We would always see windsurfers. Like, always, every time. Whether it's the fucking winter, like, whatever the time of the year, it would be always. It's funny you say that. Yeah. It totally clicks.
Yeah. I think one of the top world champions is his name is Racek Witkowski or something like this. You know, really awesome guy. But anyway, so that was my teenager years. I was a beach bum, basically. I was day in and out. I was just on the water, you know, and trying to learn new tricks, whatever, you know. And then, when I started being ambitious about concept art, you know, I dropped all of that. I just became just in my brain, you know, and abandoning my body, literally, you know. and all through the years, you know, it's come back. You know, the sailing has made a comeback, and I've been doing it more and more. I've been windsurfing more and more, and it's difficult with the family, but I've been doing more and more of it. And my big fantasy was one day my dad crossed the Atlantic, and I saw it as a psychological kind of like goal of mine to cross the Atlantic as well one day, you know, this kind of battle between myself and my dad, you know, like full on Star Wars, you know, and And so I organized it. I decided to go with a group that does that every year, you know, and I was curious. And I did it really talking about strengthening. That's why I did it. I really wanted to face myself in a place where I could be just mostly, not only, but mostly on my own or with a team, within a team, and face something that I knew was extremely difficult, because it's hard. It's hard, you know? Just because it's very unpredictable.
I cannot fathom, by the way. Like, that's like, just one day you just casually post it on your feed. It's like, oh, I just crossed the Atlantic. It's like, bro, what?
Well, and it was really about that, like really finding my limits and knowing what I was made of in many ways. And the thing that was shocking to me is I didn't come from where I expected. I thought it was going to be, for me, I remember growing up with my dad, and my dad was, we were sailing to Corsica, we were sailing to different places. It's not a huge boat, like 10 meter boat, a sailboat, you know?
Yeah.
And it was hard. I remember like puking my stomach out for weeks at a time sometimes, you know? Especially as a kid, it was really hard. But I was always admiring of my dad, who was able to just manage the boat, you know, being able to, I mean, he had other negative personality traits, but he was a very driven person, you know, and I was always admiring of that. And I was like, how did he do it? Even as I got older, I was like, I know it's hard. How did he do it? And I wanted to experience that. And so I thought, okay, well, what's going to be hard is like taking turns, you know, because there was only four of us, you know, and we were taking turns at night, two by two, you know, and making sure that we keep the other alive, you know, because you have like freaking ship lanes crossing, you have storms, you have, I mean, you have stuff that are hidden underwater that you hit. Like, it's full adventure, trust me. But the hardest part was came from somewhere super psychological and very, like, triggering for me, was the captain of the boat, you know, who was giving us orders, was full-on alcoholic, like, really damaged alcoholic person.
Damn.
And if you go across the Atlantic it took us like around 20 days, you know, the last thing you want is an alcoholic captain on board.
Especially, a true pirate.
Especially if there is no more alcohol on board.
Oh my God.
So it was hard, you know, on that aspect. But at the same time, I had my challenge. I wanted a challenge. I got my freaking challenge, you know. And that's what I told my wife when I came back. Like, well, I wanted a slap in the face. I got it, you know, not physically, but mentally. And what was hard is actually manage your expectations and your will and your inner strength while you're dealing as well with someone who's damaged on board. And we all had all the crew. Thankfully, what happens is that the crew solidified around each other. And we were able to face that captain as a group, you know, not mutiny, but we're like, okay, well, how about you go in your room and sober up, you know, while we manage the boat, you know?
Right.
And I think there's something very powerful about that. It really gave me, that's actually an experience that gave me a lot of strength, actually. You're asking, that's one of them. It gave me the sensation that it made me realize that I was a very decent person, a very responsible person. And I never knew that about me. I never knew that about myself. I just realized I'm an adult. I'm a dad. I'm someone who takes responsibility. And I think that's the validation that I was looking for.
Yeah. We should do a full podcast next time about that trip, dude. I'm so curious because
I could bring photos. I won't show the drunk captain because, of course, I don't want him to sue me or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was incredible. Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, it sounds like an adventure for sure. It's like, yeah, I just couldn't fathom. I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, that's a crazy experience. Because there's not many people do that. There's like people who do it solo, which is like, to me, that's even like more crazy. The amount of dangers
solo,
you face.
Solo, that's a whole. I mean, what we talk about, what I did, is kind of like the baby version, you know, just to put things in perspective.
It's like,
you know,
the tourist version.
Yeah, quote unquote. It's still, it's not easy, you know.
No, but, I'm not diminishing any of it at all.
I'm saying, like, even though what I'm saying is that even though it was a baby version, it was hard for me, you know.
Yeah.
But solo, that's a whole different level. But the thing about the ocean is the last unruly place on the planet right now. Unless you go to the Everest, maybe, or whatever. But the ocean is completely out of control in many ways. Not just climate change or whatever, but legally, it's a place that's completely out of control. You know, there's so much traffic happening. There's so much drug dealing. There's so much slavery. The biggest part of slavery, not everybody knows that, but where most of the slaves are nowadays, they're on fishing boats. You know, people taken from places like either Philippines or Thailand, people are enslaved on fishing boats. The fish that you eat, some people eat on a daily basis, comes from slavery, modern slavery. And there's a great book. There's a great book that's been written by that. I highly recommend it. I can't remember the title or not, but anyway, I can give you the name later. But it's legally, the ocean is a complete mess. It's far worse
because
complete Mad Max. At a certain distance from the shore, laws are different depending on the country, and sometimes there are even places where there's no laws. You know, so it's fascinating place. You know? Yeah.
So you guys have to like navigate to make it safe too.
Well, yeah, because you're on a sailboat, you know, you go where the wind tells you you're going, you know, and it's a semi-racing sailboat. So it's like, you don't sleep well. It's made of carbon. So it's like full on noisy all night long, you know, but it's also at the same time, like the movie business, it's extremely exhilarating, you know, it's like you're on the edge for 18 days, basically, you know, 18, 20 days.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, let's definitely, I want to do a follow up on that, like as a separate podcast, even like if we just talk privately, that would be fucking amazing.
I wrote a daily journal, you know, so all the data is there.
Shit. Yeah. That sounds amazing. Dude, we've been talking for like an hour and 40 already.
Sorry.
Like, I cannot believe the fucking time is flying. We can probably wrap it up here. We had like some really really good subjects going on. Is there anything you want to like mention, promote, or like talk about before we close it off? Following your Instagrams, the socials, I'll just plug them in description for sure.
Well, we're looking for a really good lighting artist at FunCon.
Okay.
That's one. A really good lighting artist, probably European based. That's one. We're gonna release an Unreal short film through the company which I'm still the CEO of, Pitch Dev Studios.
Cool.
And I'll be presenting it at Vertex in London in April. So, and it should be on YouTube in 2 months probably.
Amazing! That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, dude. Super awesome to catch up, man. Like it's.
I'm literally filled with happiness. That was awesome. I miss you.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. We need to like do like we're just like basically fucking a continent apart. Like we're on the two opposite ends of the same continent.
Big time.
But we need to figure out whether it's like gonna be, you know, like some conference or something. Yeah, we'll figure it out. Figure out the way.
Sounds great
for
to
sure.
Me. Yeah.
All right, dude. Yeah. Let's wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yeah.
Peace.
Peace.
All right. Cool.